and we're going to end off the show with diasporic music. We're going to go back to LA, to U-Radio, and I believe there's going to be continuing a tribute of Nina Simone and Charles Mingus, as well as interview with Dr. Gerald Horn around the Oscars and the Pan-African Film Festival. So we're heard here every week, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And if you want to get in contact with us with the show, you can email us at SaturdayMorningLiveRadio@gmail.com. You could check out our archives. We're at SaturdayMorningLive.wordpress.com. And if you want to get us, we're on Facebook, Saturday Morning Live, both a group and a fan page. So you could contact us that way as well. So and we're also on Twitter, and we're at Twitter at Live Saturday. So we're going to end off with diasporic music, and we're going to go to that right now. And see everyone in the whirlwind next week.
Listening to some music by someone from Los Angeles, California, by the name of Charles Mingus. And, oh Lord, don't let them drop that atomic bomb on me.
Like to play a peace title. Oh Lord, don't let them drop that atomic bomb on me. Jesus! Oh, Lord Jesus!
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Otis Richmond, a.k.a. Jalali. We will be speaking with Dr. Gerald Horn at Eastern Time in about half an hour. And he'll be speaking about the Pan-African Film Festival as well as the Oscars and whatever else we come up with. But we're paying tribute to Charles Mingus. Charles Mingus was born in Arizona. He grew up in Los Angeles, California, and he went to a high school called Jordan High School in Watts. And I guess Flojo, the sprinter, went there, and many, many great people, academic people, as well as artists and athletes. Flojo, the Whispers, Buddy Collette, a great saxophonist, he went there as well. But we're paying tribute to Charles Mingus. We're going to continue with our tribute to Charles Mingus. Thank you. You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Jalali, a.k.a. Norman Otis Richland, speaking to you from Southern California. We are paying tribute to Charles Mingus. Like we said, Charles Mingus was born in Arizona, and he grew up in the Watts area of Los Angeles, California. A great bass player, a great composer, and a very controversial human being. When I left Los Angeles in the late 60s, the last person I saw was Charles Mingus at Royce Hall at UCLA, and he threatened to jump off the stage and beat a Caucasian gentleman up. Charles Mingus was really something else. I met him many years later, and his drummer was Danny Richman. I don't think Danny Richman is related to me. I would like to say he was, but I used to think he might have been a relative. But Danny Richman was his bass player. And Danny Richman, I think, left him to play with a lot of these white groups. And at that time, Mingus was really upset at Danny Richman because he had left and was making money playing with these rock bands. But Mingus was a character. And we're going to be playing Eric Dolphy's Haitian fight song now. Haiti has been supported by Africans all over the world. because Haiti is in the, really in the vanguard of the struggle for African people, period. And Charles Mingus recognized Haiti early in his career. So we're going to listen to the Haitian fight song by Charles Mingus.
Thank you.
You are listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. We are paying tribute to Charles Mingus, and we were just listening to the Haitian fight song. Charles Mingus had a thing about Haiti, and we're going to be speaking with Dr. Gerald Horn, author of Negro Comrades of the Crown, African Americans in the British Empire Fight the U.S. Before Emancipation. He also has a great book called The End of Empires, African Americans in India, and he did a great book in 2006 called The Final Victim of the Blacklist, John Howard Lawson, Dean of the Hollywood 10, and we're going to be speaking to Dr. Horn today about the Pan-African Film Festival as well as the 85th Oscars, the 21st Pan-African Film Festival. So how are you doing today, my good friend?
Finding yourself.
Oh, everything is good. The sun is shining. There's plenty of light. I understand you guys in, I guess you're not in too bad a shape where you are, though, in terms of weather, right?
Oh, I'm in North Carolina. It's sunny and about 50 degrees.
All right. I don't think we should talk about that. That'll upset our friends on the East Coast. But I guess I wanted to get your thoughts on the first, begin with the Pan-African Film Festival, the 21st annual Pan-African Film Festival. What are your thoughts on that Pan-African Film Festival this year?
Well, first of all, listeners should go to paff.org to look at the lineup of films and contemplate holding a similar festival in your community. I've organized film festivals before, and it's not that hard to do. And given the proliferation of various outlets to get films, you can wind up exposing your community to many different and positive political trends while assembling a large and diverse audience. And I think the 21st anniversary of the Pan-African Film Festival in Los Angeles, California, exemplifies that. For example, I saw the film Mugabe, Villain, a Hero. I think you saw that film too, which was an explication of what has befallen Zimbabwe in light of the land reform initiated by the ruling party, ZANU-PF, and the kind of persecution that was faced by Zimbabwe, leading to world-class inflation as a result of this particular initiative. I also saw the film Bitter Sugar. It was about the Guadeloupe, the small, formerly French-controlled island, perhaps even today French-controlled island in the Caribbean. And it was about the end of slavery, which takes place in the wake of the revolt against French rule in Haiti, leading to the Haitian Revolution, 1791 to 1804. And what happens there should be a cautionary note to us all, because basically what happens is that slavery was abolished and then it came back. Now, I'm not saying that could happen necessarily in North America, but it is a cautionary note nonetheless.
Right.
What did you see while you were in Los Angeles, Norman?
Well, Christian Lara did the film that you were speaking of. I saw a film that he did called 1802, which was about a rebellion that took place in Guadeloupe, which was crushed, but it really helped. It took some heat off of the Haitians, so the Haitians came to power in 1804. I also saw you on a panel where you were talking about the film Django Unchained and the 1802 film, and also the film from Jamaica, which I saw about the Maroons. The thing that I saw that really struck me was the fact that 1802 and Akwantu, that's the film about the journey from a brother that used to live in Toronto, really showed the role that women played in those struggles. And Django really, it comes up very short on how women were. The women were basically just victims in Django, but in these films, 1802 and Akwantu, the women were shown as not as fighters, but, you know, like thinkers as well, you know, like actually coming up with strategy, tactics, and fighting. And I saw, what else did I see? Oh, there was a young brother who gave a lecture on, you know, spoken word. I can't think of his name right now. Having a junior-senior moment. But I thought the Fifth Fruit Festival, as far as I'm concerned, was the first time I've ever been to the Pan-African Film Festival. I think people should, like you say, try to duplicate. I mean, we can do it in every city where people are listening, and in every country where people are listening as well.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And I also saw a film about Black American interest in the martial arts. I think it's called Black Kung Fu, if I'm not mistaken. Although you may want to go to paff.org and double check that. But what I found striking about it were the number of Black Americans who wound up going to Hong Kong some decades ago in order to star in these kung fu flicks, including Ron Van Cleef, and who now lives in the Virgin Islands. And it was a very remarkable film. And what I found striking about it was how so many Black Americans took up martial arts in order to literally to fight persecution. I mean, for example, Ron Van Cleef talks about how he was brutalized in North Carolina, in fact, and it was at that precise moment he decided to become a martial arts expert to forestall that possibility from ever occurring again. So that is another film I would highly recommend. And there was a film also about the role of women, speaking of women, in the desegregation of Atlanta, Georgia, the role specifically of college students at Spelman College in Atlanta.
Howard Zinn was there, right?
That is correct, amongst other professors. And it was quite useful, quite informative.
Now, I know I wanted to ask you in terms of the Oscars. We don't have much time, but the whole Oscars thing, the Argo, which is basically the glorification of imperialism, and I understand that even Jimmy Carter said that the Canadians played a bigger role than the Americans. That is a big hit, but I understand you take the position that this film is not going to have any legs internationally. How could you elaborate on that?
Well, rather than focus on Argo, let me provide a wider perspective that I think hopefully will be useful to any activists in the audience. The U.S. film industry, like many industries that are headquartered in the United States, are increasingly becoming dependent on foreign profits for profitability. It's not enough from their point of view just to make a profit in the U.S. market. They have to make a profit abroad. And Argo, which presents a particular U.S. point of view on the hostage crisis in Iran, 1979 to 1980, or actually 81, because, of course, their release hours before Ronald Wilson Reagan is inaugurated in January 1981, that film I don't think is going to do that well abroad. Lincoln, the Steven Spielberg film about Abraham Lincoln, I don't think will do that well abroad. Your words notwithstanding, I think Django will probably do well, better abroad than both of those films, since it does not necessarily shine a positive light on the United States, and that's what foreign audiences are clamoring for nowadays.
Right,
and so what that suggests is that if those who are interested in a cinematic description of Paul Robeson, for example, are better served by seeking funding and backing in South Africa and China. China, by the way, is becoming the largest film market in the world, which means that Hollywood has to basically shape its films to fit Chinese taste. The Chinese company Wanda has just bought AMC Theaters, which controls many theaters in the United States, that is to say, the places where you go to see films outside of your living room. And so China is playing an increasingly substantial role in the international cinema industry, just as it's playing an increasingly large role in industries in general. And basically, the U.S. filmmakers are going to have to bend the knee to Beijing if they are interested in increased profitability. Now, for those of us who are close students of social change in North America, we recognize in the first place that other than the struggles of the affected peoples themselves, such as enslaved Africans, such as descendants of enslaved Africans, for example, the international situation has helped to provide the wind in our backs to guarantee victory. Certainly, that's the lesson of the erosion of Jim Crow some decades ago. And as I've argued in a recent book that you so kindly mentioned, Negro Comrades of the Crown, that's the lesson in terms of how slavery was abolished in the 19th century. So this is a major theme that I think activists should take note of. It's not enough, quite frankly, to just be conversant with what's going on in the United States. As a matter of fact, my contention is, if you don't know what's going on in the world, you don't know what's going on in the United States. You might as well, if you're an activist, you might as well retire and start selling insurance, because you're basically out of it. And so I think what's happening with regard to cinema basically is exemplifying what I'm suggesting.
You're listening to Diasporic Music on Uhuru Radio. My name is Norman Richmond. I'm speaking to Dr. Gerald Horn, author of a great book on India. And how are independent films doing in China and India and Africa? Do you have any information on that in terms of someone like Charles Burnett, films that he has made, independent filmmakers? Do you have any information on that?
Well, speaking of Charles Burnett, the well-known black filmmaker from Los Angeles, you know he did the film Namibia on the liberation struggle in what was once known as Southwest Africa. He did it with backing from the Namibians themselves. I understand it did rather well in Southern Africa. I assume it got a screening in China, although I'm not sure. Mugabe, Villain a Hero, I don't think it's going to do that well in the United States. Matter of fact, it wouldn't surprise me if it never got screened in the United States. But it'll probably do well in China, and it'll probably do well in Europe as well. Which, by the way, exemplifies how this rather conservative political climate in the United States is leading to many of us being excluded from what other peoples around the world are being exposed to. With regard to independent cinema in China, I'm not really sure. I know that with regard to Hollywood cinema, that is to say the films released by the major studios, Universal, for example, Columbia Studios, Fox. Those films reached the Chinese market after torturous negotiations between the United States government and the Chinese government. They don't just sort of show up by happenstance. And in fact, the number of films from Hollywood that are shown in China are limited. There's a ceiling, just like the number of Chinese films that are shown in the United States are limited. When's the last time you saw a Chinese film at your Metroplex, at your Cineplex, for example? When's the last time you saw a film from anywhere outside the United States at your Cineplex, for example? This is the result of rather delicate negotiations globally. And by the way, I talk about that, how that process unfolds in my first book on Hollywood, Class Struggle in Hollywood, which came out about a decade ago. So what's happening in cinema is a reflection of what's going on in the world. That is to say, a decline of U.S. imperialism, basically based upon miscalculations, which I can make reference to, not least being sort of an overdetermination of the role of Moscow, which leads to basically this deal with China and this deal with so-called Islamic fundamentalism, which now are the two major forces, speaking of China and so-called Islamic fundamentalism, that are bedeviling U.S. imperialism as we speak. And so what's happening in film is a reflection of what's going on in other industries as well.
I wanted to kind of shift gears. I don't know how much time you have left, but I saw the film Mumia Abu-Jamal, about the journey of Mumia Abu-Jamal. It's screened here in Los Angeles, and it's going to be screening in various places. But one of the things that the film talks about is the fact that Mumia's case has basically received legs because of Cuba, because of England, because of the Netherlands. And one of the things Mumia says in the film, they ask him like where he would like to go when he gets out. The first country he says is Brazil. The second country he says is Cuba. Then he says France. and the Netherlands, you know, the people, he's talking about the people where he's got the most support. Although I don't know about what the status of his case is in Brazil, but he did mention Brazil was his first choice of the places that he wanted to visit. It's a great film. I think we should it should be screened. And it's independent film in Turkey. It's an independent film. And I think the major film companies, film festivals, have not been that crazy about releasing it. This guy is doing a guerrilla type of thing where he's just taking it around from city to city. Stephen of Victoria and Noel Hanrahan, who does Prison Radio, they're the people behind the film.
Well, I'll certainly be looking for it. I recall a film a few years ago in Mamiya, I think it was called Reasonable Doubt.
Right.
That was rather persuasive, and so I'm happy to see there's another one.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
Let's see. I'm trying to think of any other films that I saw. You mentioned Nkuntu about the Maroon struggle in Jamaica. Quite interesting. Quite an interesting story, both in terms of the history and the contemporary resonance of that community in Jamaica. Let's see, what else? I guess that's about all.
The thing about the Maroons was that there's a big controversy about the deal that the Maroons made with the British. Could you explain that?
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, I guess in the late 1730s, early 1740s in particular, the Africans in certain communities in Jamaica had basically organized and fought Britain to a standstill. And so a treaty was negotiated that basically provided what we refer to now as Jamaican Maroons with a certain kind of autonomy in certain regions of Jamaica. And as part of the agreement, the Maroons agreed to return escaping Africans who had fled from British plantation owners in Jamaica. The controversy is, was that justifiable? Was that agreement justifiable by the Maroons? Now, they interview some of the Maroon descendants, and they say that it was justifiable because, as with any other struggle, they say that they had not defeated the British outright. They had just fought them to a standstill. And so, like the situation in South Africa, for example, where you make a compromise agreement, where you don't get everything you want, but you get the boot off of your neck somewhat, they say that that was the kind of agreement they negotiated to return these fleeing Africans. Now, they also say that the British would try to infiltrate into Jamaican Maroon communities by sending those who were seemingly fleeing British rule, but were actually agents of London. And so they found it hard to make distinctions, so they just returned everybody. Now, needless to say, that particular explanation still rankles to this very day in Jamaica, where many think that this was unjustifiable. I'll leave it to the Jamaicans to sort that one out.
Well, let me say this. I ask you one more question, and I know you got to get in the whirlwind, but the filmmaker Roy T. Anderson says that he supports Nanny, who led the struggle, and the co-leader of the struggle, Cudjoe. He doesn't think too highly of Cudjoe. He thinks that Nanny should be, he supports the fact that Nanny is a national hero, and he doesn't think that Cudjoe should be given any more credit because He basically, I guess, and Roy is a descendant of the Maroons, so it's a hot item. The last thing I want to ask you: did you see Home Again, which was a film that was directed by Sud Sutherland, who lives in Toronto? Sud Sutherland and his wife Jennifer Holness. Did you see that?
No. What was it about?
Oh, it was a great film about deportees, like. You know, people going, being forced to go back to Jamaica from Toronto, from
New York City,
and from London. It was, it's powerful. Filmed in Trinidad and Tobago. I'm trying to get Suds on Diasporic Music. I'll try to get him next week. But It's going to open up in Toronto in a few weeks, so people in Toronto, look out for Home Again. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, it's about time for me to get to the whirlwind.
All right, sir. So we will be speaking with you sooner than later.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. We have been speaking with Dr. Gerald Horn, and I would really like to thank Ron Bob Simple, who has been on the buttons today, and stay tuned for Ron Bob Simple. He's on tonight, and he was on this yesterday, and Ron Bob Simple, my brother, does very, very good shows, good spoken word, as well as good music, classical, calypso, or reggae, R&B, and all that good stuff. And we hope that Ron has fired up. This is Charles Mingus, Max Roach. Charles Mingus on bass, Max Roach on drums, Charlie Parker on alto saxophone, Bud Powell on piano, and the great Dizzy Gillespie on trumpet. They did a concert in Toronto at Massey Hall in 54-55, and they did a repeat concert in tribute to that 50 years later, where Max Roach was brought on stage by Herbie Hancock, and it's a classic album, a world-famous album, and it was done at Massey Hall in Toronto, and we're going to end with that. And this is Norman Otis Richmond saying we'll see you next week, and we will see you in the whirlwind. Take care of yourself. James Brown, Maxine Brown's All in My Mind. By mistake, I take credit for that mistake, and even, like I always say, even geniuses make mistakes.